Welcome to the Language Hacking Podcast from Fluent in 3 Months.
Hello and welcome to an episode of the Language and Travel Hacking Podcast. You heard that right, and you have not tuned into the wrong station. This used to be the Language Hacking Podcast, but I've decided to rebrand it because, as you guys know, I am extremely passionate about travel, and I've had a bunch of episodes that dive into that briefly, and I've always felt like I'm not quite touching on the main topic of the podcast. So to make it easier on myself and to allow myself to talk about many topics related to travel, I'm going to go in a slightly different direction, and this is going to be about traveling and language learning, with many episodes just about travel like this one. So that being said, I think it's a good way to kick off the new series by going into the fact that I have been a nomad for 21 years. So in this episode, I want to talk about what's changed since I first started traveling in 2003. First, I'll talk about things that I feel were actually much better in the 2000s compared to now for people getting into travel then. And then in the second half, I'll talk about things that are actually better nowadays for traveling. So it's a mixed bag, and I have been doing this long enough that I've seen things evolve over the years. So the first one is the online tools to meet people is actually not as good now as it used to be, believe it or not. You would expect with how much the internet has exploded over the last 20 years that there would be even more resources. But unfortunately, the best things that I can think about that allowed me to connect with other travelers don't exist, or they're not really like they used to be. And one, for example, was the social media site Orkut, which I used in Brazil when I was here the first time. And it was absolutely fantastic because there were communities for every single town and they were very active there. And it was very easy for me to get online and meet a bunch of people that way. And that was acquired by Google and effectively, like many things acquired by Google, just phased out of existence. Another one is Couchsurfing, which was and still is my favorite site in my entire life because of all the good I've gotten out of this one website. But unfortunately, the current version is a shadow of its former self. They started charging people, and part of the pull of it was free to use. And the community just died slowly over time. It still exists, but it's nothing like it used to be. And several other communities and online websites that I used to use just don't exist anymore. And nowadays, I will make an episode about how I meet people when I travel, but it's a lot more work nowadays. There are various resources I can still use. There's meetup.com. There is a way to use Facebook to make it somewhat usable. There are certain communities that exist now that didn't exist previously. So there are advantages now, but I just found it a lot more streamlined way back in the 2000s. So that's one thing that was better initially. Another one was how finding accommodation worked, because nowadays a lot more people have become aware that they can charge passers through a little bit higher a fee if they sign up for a site like Airbnb. And that means that the most ideal apartments that are short-term rent available tend to be on those websites, and the price tends to get marked up because of that. And they're a lot more competitive with other people, but then they add Airbnb fees and such. Whereas when I was traveling 20 or so years ago, there was no Airbnb. And what I had to do was I had to use local equivalent short-term rental options, which meant I even went as far as to look up ads in a newspaper. You can't imagine doing that nowadays, but I would indeed find a local newspaper, look at the ads, and I got some spectacular places, and of course, for incredible prices. One of my favorite places I've ever stayed at in my life was a penthouse apartment in Rio de Janeiro, which had a 270-degree panoramic view of the city, including the iconic Statue of Christ and the Sugarloaf Mountain. And it was so big, I threw parties there, had people over all the time. and I was only paying $300 a month for that place. Many years later, I came back, I found the exact same place on Airbnb. About 6 years ago, I was looking and I found it, and it was $300 a night instead of a month. So things changed dramatically, because the short-term rental market is much more tailored to this online tourist niche, and people don't even need to speak the local language. Obviously, when I found that place way back in 2006, my first time in Brazil, I had to haggle the price in Portuguese. And that's not something you can do ahead of time in English, obviously. Whereas with Airbnb, you don't need to speak Portuguese. You can just click book and you're good to go. They don't care if you don't speak the local language. So this means there's a lot more other tourists that are competing for your places, which of course makes the prices go up. Speaking of prices, that is one of the biggest differences by far over the last 20 years. I consider myself so incredibly lucky that I got to travel the world in the 2000s, because when I graduated from university, I did not have any money. And when I started working some jobs, ultimately for the first about 5 years of my travels, believe it or not, I was only working off about €1,000 a month. So my salary was €12,000 a year, and that was more than enough for me to have my accommodation, to eat in all the countries I was going to, and even to get all my plane tickets there. Nowadays, you could still stretch that kind of money in certain places, but it would not work across the world. Whereas I was doing this in Western Europe and a lot of other places that you would definitely need a higher budget nowadays. So it's very unfortunate, especially the likes of flights. Flights used to be much cheaper back in the 2000s, and they've dramatically changed. But because of that situation, even without having a lot of money, I was so lucky that I got to live in places like Rome, San Francisco, and even the likes of Thailand, which is still cheap, was actually much cheaper back then. And even when I think of the most expensive place I've been in my life, the likes of Manhattan, New York, even now, today, it's way more expensive than when I arrived there 9 years ago. So 9 years ago, it was already too expensive for me. But comparing what it is now to then is just day and night. So I was still lucky that I made it there when I did. So it's very unfortunate, but prices across the world have gone up, and a lot more people in the tourist industry have kind of latched onto that and taken advantage of that. I'm lucky now that I have the kind of employment that means I can afford to go on a more stretched budget than I used to, but it's still unfortunate that that's the way it is. I promise I'm getting to the good stuff after one more point. The other thing is the influencer culture that exists now. Obviously, smartphones did not exist for a large chunk of my first years of travels. There was no such thing as even an iPhone hadn't come out. So that meant that the likes of getting photos for Instagram, which also didn't exist, was not a concept people could get their heads around. Whereas nowadays, it is much more of a priority. I see people going to places just for those Instagram photos, sometimes even just for a TikTok. And of course, people have their faces in smartphones a lot more, but that's not really a travel specific thing. That's more of an international thing. And I want to keep this more travel related. So all that being said, there are multiple things that are actually much better nowadays. One of them is convenience. So as an example, I'm a vegetarian, and nowadays I know I can find vegetarian food in a lot of places. Like when I compare Brazil, where I am now, to when I came here in 2006, it was extremely difficult for me to find something that was tailor-made to vegetarians. So I would typically always go to the self-service buffet restaurants and just get rice and beans and some vegetables on the side. I could always find that, but there'd never be vegetarian-specific options. Whereas nowadays, I can even go with my friends to a steakhouse and I can be pretty confident they're going to have a veggie burger for me. That would have been laughable when I was here in 2006. So it's very convenient in that way. It's convenient in other ways, like I can order an Uber in most countries. And if they don't have Uber, they pretty much always have a local equivalent app that functions the same. And that's extremely convenient because when I was out and about and I needed to find my way home, I would have to hail a taxi or I'd have to phone up and reserve it, which might be tricky if you're still learning the language. But it's just so much easier now. And I get around a lot more than I used to because I did have to, in a way, there's certain advantages that I was forced to rough it a bit. And I absolutely had to get buses and trams and such across cities. And that did give me a bit more of an immersive feeling. And you're protected a little bit from that if you get Ubers. But it's still much more convenient that you can get everywhere. You can feel a lot more safe that no matter where you are, you press a few buttons and a car will show up. And of course, it's still affordable in a lot of places. Like when I think about getting an Uber in some Western European countries, and especially in the States, it's not really something that becomes affordable anymore, but it's still very much affordable in the likes of South America. So that's extremely convenient. And there's plenty of other apps, like there's delivery apps. Again, there are downsides to that. Delivery apps are one reason I put on way too much weight over the pandemic. So I intentionally went out of my way in one of my first travels to go somewhere that I knew there would be no delivery apps because it was so far off the beaten track. I try to avoid those conveniences, but it still does make life a lot simpler. One other less advantageous convenience is a very big difference that a lot more people speak English now, which is very convenient for people who want to travel the world. It just happens to clash with my personal mission of trying to learn the local language. And that pressure that I had in my first decade or so of travels, that I absolutely had to speak that the local language because no one was going to speak English with me in most places I'd go to. That pressure is still there. It's just not as strong in a lot of places because more and more people have learned English. Another difference is that when I was first traveling, there were definitely lots of travel communities I was a part of. And these were very much so adventure travelers, but that's really morphed towards digital nomads. Now, I have always been a digital nomad. I was traveling with a laptop when I started, and I got work online as a freelance translator, which isn't quite the same as working with blogs and podcasts and such, but it was still me working entirely online and earning from a European company, which allowed me to take advantage of currency differences. So the same principle as a regular digital nomad. But nowadays, it's so much more typical. When I first started, I was the only person most people had ever met in their life who was doing this style of life in general, not just work, but taking the work with them. And that's become a lot more common. And that's great because it's open to so much more people. And especially one of the few upsides of the pandemic is it forced society to adapt to people working from home. And that has stretched over into the travel world. It's allowed a lot more people to travel who would not have been able to travel before 2020 because their work would not have evolved to be online yet. So that's fantastic that the world is so much more open to people doing the kinds of things I'm doing. There's many different types of jobs that work for that. Another great thing about the diversity of travelers has completely exploded. Like generally, most people I'd meet would typically be more likely to be white guys like myself. But I have noticed way more families traveling, way more female travelers who are traveling solo, way more LGBTQ travelers. And this is fantastic. The diversity in the type of traveler you're likely to meet in the road really tells you the world has opened up. People are a lot more open-minded. The world is a bit more safer for different types of travel. It's a bit more flexible for people who are traveling with children. And it was pretty much something I would never see in my first years of travels, was that level of diversity in many different ways, as I mentioned. Another one that is very different is the speed of the internet. So like I said, I have relied on the internet for a very long time because I've always been working online, essentially. And I still remember there was this time in the Philippines that I just could not get a good Wi-Fi internet connection. So I had to do all my work off a 2G connection tethered to my phone. And that was a pain, I can tell you. And like, I appreciate even 3G connections in comparison. Like, I know a lot of places have 5G now, but I'm appreciative of 4G that I tend to get most of the time because I lived off 2G. I know what it was like. And then there was this time in Egypt where I was recording YouTube videos and my connection was so slow. This would have been in 2014. My connection was so slow, it took 2 days to upload my YouTube video. And this was not a big video. This was maybe a 5-minute video in 720p, which is not a very high quality video. It took 2 days to upload that. I still remember I couldn't do anything on my computer because it was so slow. Whereas now, no matter where I go, the internet is always usable. You can always have a video call. I've not generally seen it much worse than 1 megabit, which is pretty bad by modern standards, but you can get a lot done on that. And again, my basis of comparison is working off way older, slower internet. So I appreciate the modern version of slow a lot more than a lot of people would. But generally, most places, I'm getting pretty decent connections, even much more comparable to countries that would be expected to have the fastest internet. So I really appreciate that. And it's definitely opened the world up to people to be able to do the likes of things like working and maintaining communication with their families and so on. Now, I have mentioned working online and the logistics, and I've talked a lot about my experience. As a reminder, if you want to chat with me one-on-one, you can do that by just going to languagehacking.com/chat. And that'll get you to my calendar and we can book a session. I'd love to chat with you. So that's always available. I'll have the link in the show notes for anybody who doesn't remember that. But going on to just some final points. Of course, the biggest thing that's changed in the last 21 or so years has been me. I'm a lot older. I view things differently. I've had a lot of different life experiences, both positive and negative, that have changed my philosophy and view of the world. And of course, like I mentioned before, there are lots of changes that I could have added to all of this, all of these lists, but it's more about changes in the world in general that wouldn't necessarily be travel specific. But one thing I will say is, despite all of this, like I said, I've been very lucky to have experienced cities like Rio and Rome and so on, without having to have a lot of money when I was going to those places. But I will say that as I'm traveling this year, it has been so affordable and I have not had to worry about feeling like I'm surrounded by other travelers and all the locals speak English, because I've really felt that same experience I had in my initial travels by going off the beaten track. And you hear that expression a lot, but it really is a philosophy I hope people will embrace a lot more. Because the feeling I'm getting from this trip in Brazil, and of course you don't have to go to Brazil, but specifically not going to the major, most touristed city of a country, but going a little bit off the track there and finding some other version of a travel project, like my version of visiting all the states of the country or whatever. I am not spending a lot of money. A lot of the accommodation I've been finding is super affordable. It's just like $30 a day. Eating out is still affordable. I'm the first foreigner a lot of people are meeting. So even though the world has evolved such that if you go to Rio, you're going to have a bit more of a protected experience than you would have had if you went there 20 years ago. And the same goes for if you go to many other major cities, you are going to be surrounded by a lot of other tourists. People are very surprised when you go to one of the most famous spots in the city, you're going to be surrounded by a lot of people. And that's just the way it is. But there's so many beautiful parts of the world that are completely untouched by tourists. There's still plenty of local tourists, just not so much foreign tourists who've made their way there yet. So there is so much of the world left to explore. I hope you'll keep that in mind. And thanks for joining me on this episode. I will be back again chatting way more travel. And let me know what you guys think about this new format. I hope you enjoy me talking about the travel experience, as I've talked about the language aspect so many times. And I got many more topics to talk about. So this, I'm looking forward to getting regular episodes into your ears again. Thanks for listening. And until the next time, happy language learning and happy travels.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Language Hacking Podcast. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you found this episode valuable and want to help us out, please leave a review at languagehacking.com/review. The Language Hacking Podcast is presented by Benny Lewis and produced by Kittichai Boonthong, with special thanks to the Fluent in 3 Months team. The theme music was written and performed by Shannon Kennedy. Find the show notes at languagehacking.com/podcast. Thank you for listening, and happy language learning.